Welcome to Influential Visions. Here we interview futuristic leaders who share their deep industry knowledge and business experience with you, ensuring you have your finger on the pulse and your eyes wide open. Here is your host, Nathaniel Schooler.
Well, I am very privileged today to be joined by Lisa Ventura, MBE, and we are here to talk about cybersecurity and the future of it and what we think that is going to look like over the next few years. I mean, things are changing rapidly at the moment. So thank you, Lisa. I really appreciate you joining me. I'm really looking forward to this conversation as you're very knowledgeable in this space.
Thanks, Nat. It's an absolute pleasure to be here today with you.
Thank you. Thank you. So, I mean, there's lots of talk around AI going on right now. And I think that's probably the first thing that we'll just dig into, you know, because we've got different spectrums. We've got the private AI, which, you know, corporations like Appian Corporation are doing some really great work around. And, you know, then we've also got public AI, which basically means every man and his dog uses it. We share all our information and it basically is training the model on our information. So, and it's obviously hoovering up all this data from all over the internet and everywhere else. So we're in a bit of a no man's land right now, because obviously the EU just created the AI Act, which is, well, they created it a while back, 3 years ago, I believe. And I've been talking about this for 10 years because I went to IBM's round table 10 years ago, it will be this year, and talked about AI and jobs and you know, corporations' responsibilities and ethics and all these sorts of things that you and I talk about all the time.
Yeah.
And I'm kind of just sitting here and I'm wondering, you know, obviously corporations like Appian are really going to be boosting the confidence that people need and that governments need to use more AI in their systems and things. But you've got this big, big difference between private AI, public AI, technology companies saying, we'll give you private AI. So what do you think, Lisa, about this?
It's certainly exploded exponentially over the last couple of years, and particularly since a lot of the learning language models like ChatGPT came on the scene. And I think that you mentioned the EU Act, which has only just sort of come into fruition, although, as you rightly said, it's been talked about, it's been in development for a number of years. And over here in the UK, we obviously had the AI summit, government summit that took place at Bletchley Park in November last year. So there are some small steps to round all of this, but I think that the genie is well and truly out of the bottle now, so to speak, with it. And we really need to get, you know, ahead with that ethics, with those acts, those things in place. And steps are being taken towards that. And a big part of what I'm going to be doing with Cybersecurity Unity is creating a working group around AI and cybersecurity in particular. There's a lot of concerns as well over things like the bias that some of these learning language models like ChatGPT has shown, the rise of deep fakes as well. And that's something that I'm looking at really closely, and I'm sure I'm not the only one, as we go into a really important election year over here in the UK and, of course, in the USA, with both elections taking place at some points this year, USA November, ours yet to be determined. So we really need to be thinking about, you know, all these different facets of AI and when it comes to cybersecurity and how that all links together. I think it's going to be a really interesting time for sure with how all this develops.
Yeah, it's very, very worrying, but also it's exciting at the same time.
Yeah, because absolutely.
Because, you know, I mean, it can write code, but then obviously there's a risk to it writing code without that code being checked properly.
Yeah.
Having that code created by an AI model, a malicious actor, let's call them an actor, might be able to go in there. They might be able to inject some sort of malicious code in there. And then obviously that's going to cause damage to the corporation and the reputation of that corporation as well, because obviously there are implications if that piece of malicious code does some sort of activity which creates data breach, then obviously data breach is going to be huge. I mean, recently there was a data breach. There have been so many data breaches, right? Mm. Like over the past few years, like it's actually pretty insane, really, isn't it? And people just don't invest in the cybersecurity, do they, as much as they actually should? When, you know, I mean, I know you will hopefully agree with me that cybersecurity should be the foundation of any business, right? And any piece of new technology that is being implemented, you know?
Absolutely, Nat, agree 100%, because it's so critical. And as you say, there are data breaches, you know, happening every single day, but only the really sort of mainstream, you know, ones when it's a high level company tend to get, you know, out into the press. But there are always breaches going on, you know, every second of every day. And that's just, you know, getting, you know, worse and worse all the time. So I always say you never, ever, ever will get on top of it, but you do need to be, you know, aware of the threat landscape and, you know, what's going on and all the different, you know, trends and enhancements that are happening. And then, you know, you and I were talking just before we started this conversation around, while a lot of the bigger businesses obviously have the budgets and do invest in their cybersecurity, a lot of small traders, startups, and even some sort of, you know, smaller size SMEs still today think that cybersecurity isn't something that they need to have on their radar. And they have a common, you know, misconception that they're too small to be targeted and they're not going to be, you know, hit with a cyber attack, which, you know, in 2024, I just think, oh my goodness. And I still think there's a really big education piece to be done, particularly to those smaller size businesses. Because it's all around, you know, you might think you're small, but what about your supply chains? What about, you know, the people you deal with? How can you be confident that everything that you've got in place is going to, you know, defend against cyber attacks? And also, you know, I think there are things that they can do that actually don't cost, you know, a lot of money, or sometimes even don't cost anything, you know, at all. And the NCSC has put out some really good stuff around the 10 steps to cybersecurity, particularly for those smaller businesses that can really help with their cyber posture, which is all things like, you know, making sure your firewalls are to date and your antivirus and all that stuff, two-factor authentication, complex passwords, all of that. It's obviously never going to sort of stop it completely. But there's a lot that you can do to go some small way to fortifying your defenses against cyber attacks.
Absolutely. And, you know, to catch the bull, so to speak, right? I mean, there's so much going on in tech right now. You've got all of these companies that are integrating their AI models into chips, as one example, and those chips will also be having cybersecurity integrated within them, and that is very, very exciting for me. And also having, you know, localized computing on your phone, on your machine, which once upon a time went up into the cloud, is also a threat, because people are going to be trying to attack that instead of attacking the cloud, right? So then you're basically just going to have to watch much more closely what is going on. Having your firewalls sorted out, having all of these things sorted for the small business is vital, you know, and like you say, the passwords and things like this. But, you know, with having quantum computing being available now, that's becoming more mainstream now, that actually has its own threats. So, you know, it's quite complex, really. I mean, the more it grows, the more the cyber criminals become better, don't they, at targeting people. But I'm also very worried about deep fakes, actually, especially when it comes to paying money to people. I mean, if someone calls you and leaves a message and says, oh, hey, Lisa, you know, and say you're the accounting person within a business, and they call you and say, hey, Lisa, can you just send me blah, 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 X amount of money? I'll drop you an email with my bank details because I've changed my bank account. And that's your managing director or your CEO who sent you that message. You could pay the guy some money or the lady some money without being sexist about it. And potentially you have just given away your company's money to a very, very sophisticated cyber criminal. And these things happen quite regularly, but it's actually going to get worse than that, because you're then going to have the videos where people like us, who are very visible in the space, people can create videos of us talking and then send them to people. And I'm deeply worried about that, if I'm brutally honest. Yeah. But I can't do anything about it, because I'm kind of an industry spokesman now. So as you are a spokeswoman, so it's a difficult challenge, isn't it, really?
It is. And I've seen a lot of deep fakes and videos. We've got Martin Lewis here in the UK, who's very prominent in terms of, you know, money saving expert tips and so on. And he's had videos pertaining to be from himself saying to people, come and invest in this scheme. And people have, and they've lost, you know, a lot of money because of it. So it is a huge problem. It's a growing problem. I also see a lot of, as you rightly said, CEO frauders as well, you know, phone calls and emails pertaining to be from, you know, the CEOs or the finance department for various companies. Even at Qualitas, where I'm doing a lot of work at the moment, whenever we go through an investment round, that seems to be the time when the PR goes out about that investment round. That's when we seem to get a lot of emails, you know, coming in and attempts at trying to be our CEO, Amnu. And it's always along the lines of emails or calls or things coming in of need you to just go and make this urgent payment, or need you to just go and do this, you know, for us. I know straight away, but yes, you know, a few people have been caught out by it. And it also extends as well into things like, you know, WhatsApp and so on. We rely on those channels to keep in touch with your family, friends, colleagues, and we use that, you know, all the time. And then there's the WhatsApp Bank of Mum and Dad scam that I've seen quite a few people being fallen victim to. And I think because, you know, we're all so busy and we've got so much information and so much coming at us from all sides, that if we get a message like that, and I mean, I'm not a parent, but, you know, people that are parents that have children, and they get a message like, you know, hi mum or hi dad, I've lost my phone, this is my new number, and by the way, can you transfer me some money? Yeah, when we're really busy, it's all too easy that we're going to get caught out by this sort of thing. And another one recently that even I had to look at, because where cyber criminals are really good at this is I don't know if it was a coincidence or not, but I just got a new car recently, and I just taxed that new vehicle using the gov.uk website and gone through it and done it all. Not 5 minutes after I'd done that, I actually received what was a phishing email pertaining to be from gov.uk saying, your car is tax has now expired. Please click on this link to renew and make sure your tax is up to date. Now, it could have been a complete coincidence, but no, because no, I've no. just been on that gov.uk website taxing the new car, and I looked at that and I thought, that just doesn't look right to me, but I know what I'm looking for. What if anybody else who doesn't could have easily clicked on that link and given away information or made a payment or done something? Whereas for me, I was able to spot it. But even being so busy, it could have been so easy for me to just not register that and just click on that link, and then it would have been too late.
Well, you would have, I mean, you could in theory go through a whole payment. I mean, you'd have gone, paid it again, and then mm-hmm. gone, oh dear. And, you know, and it's like, well, actually, it sounds a bit suspicious to me. And in yeah. fact, if I was actually working for the UK government in that department, I would be very, very worried, because I doubt it's your email that's been hacked. I doubt it's that. I imagine you probably change your passwords like we, you know, like I do all the time, and they are secure. So I find it very, very suspicious, if I'm brutally honest. And like I say, I would be quite worried if that was me in that department. So yeah, that's but they're becoming even more sophisticated. I mean, this is the piece, isn't it? These cyber criminals, as cyber defenses get better, they get better, right? And that's just, it's just the way that it is. But I'm very interested, I know you're interested too in this, it's the actual triggering of people to take action. And you mentioned a minute ago about being really super busy and just not not taking notice. And this is something that the cyber criminals use in order to get people to click on links, right? Like the whole psychological piece is actually very interesting. And you're doing a bit of work in that area, aren't you? A bit of study, I think you were saying to me
today. Absolutely. So I'm looking at branching out into the whole sort of cyber psychology piece. I've done a lot in terms of social engineering and how cyber criminals will use, you know, language and use things to make these emails appear sort of, you know, urgent or, you know, time sensitive, or, you know, we must click and take this action, you know, now, else we're going to lose out. And, you know, that whole thing has always been really fascinating to me in terms of how they do that. And it's only getting, you know, worse with all the things like ChatGPT and the learning language models, because some of the traditional advice that was usually given to try and spot these phishing email attempts, you know, were things like, as well as looking at the URLs and to see, you know, if they've made up in numbers or they're not quite right or something like that, was always, you know, look at the language used and, you know, look at the grammar, look at the spelling, look at the way it's put together. Well, of course, ChatGPT now can put those emails, you know, out, and it can be much easier now to look at an email and think, this actually looks genuine, I'm going to click on it. So some of that more traditional advice, I think, just needs to be reshaped a little bit in the advent of artificial intelligence and machine learning.
Absolutely. But I think that there's a lot to be said about being very, very busy. And this is when the mistakes can be made. If you're very stressed and you're really, really busy, something comes at you, but you click a link just before you've even thought about it, because you're actually operating on a different level. And this is why we need to be a lot more cautious with overloading our diaries, with attending meetings that are completely irrelevant to our job title. And it's like, oh, you must go to this meeting. It's like, why are you going to that meeting? Is that meeting actually relevant to you? Does it actually mean you have to sit there for an hour, waste an hour of your time to then jump onto another meeting, which is immediately afterwards without a break in between? Because for me, that is just a one-way ticket to being overloaded and then actually damaging the company because you're clicking a link, you know?
Absolutely. And with all those meetings, with all that stuff coming at us, that's when we can get, you know, as you say, really overwhelmed, really overloaded. And that's where a lot of stress and burnout can creep in, which I think, as you know, is a huge issue within the cybersecurity industry and InfoSec in particular. And that's when mistakes can be made. So getting it through no fault of anybody's, you know, just being that bit overwhelmed, you know, not being as fastidious as checking as you normally would. So that's why, again, I do a lot of talking about the importance of trying to stay on top of, you know, stress and burnout, and trying to recognize some of the signs before they creep in.
Yeah. Well, it's a real minefield out there. I mean, where do you see cybersecurity jobs kind of heading? I know this isn't really, you know, on topic too much, but I'm very interested in sort of how it's developing in the next sort of year, 2 years, 3 years, five, and beyond.
Absolutely, Nat. So I see a lot of automation sort of coming in terms of the future of jobs. Especially in cybersecurity and in you know, a lot of other areas as well. Just from a sort of day-to-day example, you see it in the supermarkets here a lot in the UK, whereas all the checkouts would be operated by an actual person. There are now, in most supermarkets, only a handful of these, and there are now a lot of self-service automated stations for you to pay for your goods. But I also see a lot of automation sort of creeping into the cybersecurity space, and especially when it comes to running scans and vulnerability checks, and particularly in pen testing. So there are tools like Nipper Studio. Whereas, you know, back in the day, I was part of Titanium Limited that founded that tool, and there's Nessus and, you know, other tools as well. that can actually take the undertaking of pen testing, for example, down to a couple of days or so, down to a matter of minutes by doing a lot of those scans and so on and automating. So there are those elements. And I think the digital world is creating a lot of new roles that were actually non-existent a few years ago. AI engineers, virtual reality designers, even blockchain developers. Yeah, there's lots creeping in that as technology continues to evolve. There are such new opportunities that will emerge, and those do require some really specialist skills and expertise as well.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely, and especially when you think of quantum coming online, and all absolutely. Of these new tools as well, and it's more about the domain knowledge and the adaptability of learning new programs and new ways of working than it is doing manual work, right? So, in my mind, I'm seeing jobs becoming not necessarily easier, but I think less time consuming in my opinion.
Yeah. Absolutely. And I said before, even just taking the supermarket analogy, it's supposed to sort of save time. You can just scan your goods through, really quickly and then leave the store. And that's what I've seen as well with the examples that I mentioned in terms of pen testing, running a lot of those sort of automated scans and so on. So it's time saving. It cuts the time down of doing a manual penetration test. By using a lot of these tools and so on that are available. But certainly with quantum computing, that holds immense promise for solving a lot of really complex situations and problems. So I think that the development of quantum resistant encryption and so on, this needs to be looked at really carefully. But like you say, it's also a really exciting time to see all these developments.
Yeah. Yeah, I can't wait. I want to go and see one of these quantum computers. I'm really excited about it. I know that's extremely geeky, right? It's very geeky stuff, but it's quite insane the way things have actually moved. The past 30, 40 years have been rather bizarre in the way that things are growing now. And I mean, I think I'm as excited about the future as you are, and we get the privilege to talk to these very intelligent people, you included, who actually come along to the cybersecurity lunch hour that you run, which I actually went to my first one last week, and I'm hooked on that now. I'm totally hooked. I was sitting there and I was like completely wired, like all these really intelligent cyber people, like talking about all sorts of threats and like all of these things. And I was sitting there and I was like, I really quite enjoy this. This is quite a cool space. And, it's something I know a bit about, but from bitter experience, right? Like a lot of people, and I can't sort of talk about that, but it's amazing to sort of hear the success stories from some of these people and how they've actually fixed problems, how they've helped small businesses. And we get the pleasure of kind of talking to a lot of the people who run the cyber resilience centers and work for the police in the UK. And that's really exciting. Like, that big shout out to you guys and all the management team over there, because you're doing a wonderful job. And I mean, I did an interview with them. It must be, I don't know, maybe 4 years ago. Must be 4 years ago. And I interviewed all of them with the amazing Tyler Cohen Wood, who I know you know. And it was just a fantastic interview. And I remember the chap was just stepping down, who had rolled out all of these 2,000 policemen and policewomen. And he said, it's all about Mrs. Miggins at number 37, something close. And that's the person that we're trying to secure. And I was like, and that's it, isn't it? It's about Mrs. Miggins, and I just found that really stuck in my mind. It's just fantastic,
Absolutely. Now, and one of the things I think for me as well is around the Holster cyber awareness piece. One of the things I'm going to be doing with Cybersecurity Unity is launching a campaign called Generation Cyber. And there are two facets to that campaign. So One facet is around the whole cybersecurity skills piece and getting more people into careers in cybersecurity. So there's going to be a big campaign around that and all the different career pathways into the industry, aimed very much more at the general public about it. But I think as well, Generation Cyber is going to exist to really showcase, you know, cybersecurity and really get people thinking about it with those real world experiences, like those things like the WhatsApp Bank of Mum and Dad scams, all those things that, you know, we're exposed to, you know, on a daily basis. But I truly believe that if we can get everybody really thinking about their cybersecurity from a personal perspective, that's going to cascade down into their work life as well. You know, let's face it, we are all Generation Cyber now. There's no getting away from it. We are all Generation Cyber, and that's going to be the ethos of the campaign, to really sort of, you know, drive home the importance of it, not just from a work perspective, but from a, you know, from in every facet of our lives and everything that we do.
Well, I think it's fantastic. I'm really excited to actually work with you. We launched Imposter Syndrome, International Imposter Syndrome Awareness Day, which is on the 13th of April. And that's going to be coming along soon. And, you know, it's rife in the tech industry. And and I think, you know, working alongside you on that and seeing how cybersecurity unity grows and all of these things, very exciting. And you know, it's just great to be kind of a part of all of that, to be honest. So I want to thank you so much. And, you know, if anyone wants to get us, I'll drop some links wherever you listen. And thank you all very much for listening. And thanks once again, Lisa. Appreciate you very much.
Thank you, Nat. It's been a pleasure today.
Thanks very much for listening to Influential Visions. Please make sure you share this episode with your friends and business connections. And don't forget to drop us a review wherever you listen. Thanks.